Blog Talk Radio.
That's what I'm talking about. Y'all know what I'm talking about. I'm talking about straight funk, okay? That's the way I give it to you every week, straight. No fakers, no artificial flavors, no preservatives, none of that. And once again, this week, we are doing it once again. You are tuned in to Everybody Is a Star live on Thrive Family Channel. And this is your favorite flavor, Patrice Chocolate Banks. I hope your week was a productive one, and if you are in Southern Cali, I know that you have been hot as heck. As a matter of fact, I took a dare and made a fried egg and bologna sandwich on my sidewalk yesterday, but that's another story that I'll tell at another time. I didn't really think that eggs could really fry on a sidewalk. I should have YouTubed that, but anyway, I need to tell you that for tonight's show, you need to be rested up and ready to get your groove on. Once again, we have a very special edition of Everybody Is a Star. It has been 10, and can you believe it, long years since Rick James has made his transition. So tonight, we want to, you know, honor his memory by having as our guests the original members of the Stone City Band. Now, all I have to say is pull out your incense, your gas mask, your Ozium. Anybody remember Ozium? Strike a match, do something, because it's about to get funky all up in here, and that is not a threat. That is a promise, okay? So here we go. I'm so excited, The first member we're going to talk to tonight from the original Stone City Band is the original guitar player, Mr. Tom McDermott. Tom, what's going on?
Hey, Patrice. Hey, how are you doing? I'm doing great.
I am doing good, and I'm so excited. 10 years.
Yeah, what? It's hard to believe it's been 10 years. Time has flown by like
wow.
So fast, you know.
Wow. Yes. It seems like I, you know, just heard that news, and I was saying, what? Rick James. So anyway, but here we are today, 10 years later, and we are going to honor him and his memory today, and we're going to funk it up, and I hope you are ready. Did you do some push-up?
Okay. Oh, yeah.
Okay, all right. Now, I want to find out, I'm going to have other members of the band on as well, but we're starting with you. And what I want to find out is, you know, some information on you. So let's start with where you are from. Where were you from? Where were you born and raised?
I was actually born in Ohio, Cleveland, Ohio, the hometown of the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame. And
right.
My dad was in the service, so we moved around a lot when we were kids. But mainly I was raised in Southern California here, and I'm still living here also. So you said about the hot weather, I can relate to that.
It's been burning up, hasn't it?
Yeah, it's terrible.
And you should try that egg thing because it works. So when you say that you were basically raised here in Southern California, like what area?
Burbank area, actually.
Oh, okay, all right.
Yeah.
So now, what were your first musical influences?
Actually, it was the Rolling Stones, and then when I was a kid. Then later on, I got into jazz when I was about 16, and I really enjoyed listening to Wes Montgomery a lot, and I tried to emulate him with his octaves and all that, because he was really one of my favorite all-time guitar players and still is to this day.
Just so smooth.
Yeah, he's such a legend,
What were your mom and dad listening to, like around the house? Because you know, most of the time, our first influences are whatever our parents were listening to. We had to listen to what they listened to. So did they listen to anything in particular?
You know, not really. They were more like the Lawrence Welk type of corny stuff, you know.
Oh, okay.
That stuff. But they, you know, that's why I went on my own and listened to what I wanted to listen to, you know, the Rolling Stones. And my brother liked the Beatles. I really didn't like the Beatles that much. But, yeah, it was.
You liked the Rolling Stones, huh?
Yeah.
The Stones had a little more grit, huh?
Right. You know, a little more blues to it, you know, and then I got into, you know, Freddie King, B.B. King, and, you know, all the great blues players after that, too.
Right. You know. So now I forgot to ask you. I always ask everybody, shout out your schools. What schools did you go to?
Oh, I was a Catholic boy for my first 8 years. I went to St. Patrick's in North Hollywood.
All right, St. Patrick's.
Yeah. And then I went to Bellarmine Jefferson. It's a Catholic school in Burbank for 2 years. And then I asked my parents if I could go to public school, which they had music, and I wanted to get in the band. And they said, yeah, sure, you can go ahead, you know. So I was able to get into the jazz band, and that was really fun. So that kind of kicked off my guitar playing career somewhat. And then I went to Valley College, L.A. College.
Shout them out. Okay, so that was my next question. Like, when did the music bug bite you? Like, when did you decide that being a musician was what you were meant to do?
Probably when I was about the age of 16. I really bit me hard. You know, I got my first guitar, and I was taking some lessons from this cool cat, you know. And, and I just practiced all the time, you know, and it took off from there and got into some little bands, you know, and just, you know, snowballed, you know, just like probably everybody.
What made you decide upon the guitar?
I don't know. Guitar, it's just a really intriguing instrument, you know. Everybody loves to hear a guitar, you know.
Mm-hmm.
And probably the Stones had a lot to do with it, you know, Wes Montgomery, you know. And that was a big influence there. I just love the sound of the guitar. You know, there's so many sounds you can get with a guitar. You know, you can get nasty, bluesy, you know, smooth. You know, there's many dimensions the guitar can take you, and that's what I love about it, you know.
Okay, so you picked up the guitar, you were 16, you got serious about it. So tell me this, how many little local groups were you in?
Oh boy, how many local groups? A whole bunch, you know. When I was growing up, you could make a living when I was like 19 playing clubs. You can make $200 a week, and man, you were set. You know, you can pay your rent, and pay your gas, you know, buy your beer, you know, and you were happening, you know. And today it's so much harder for young people, you know, because they have to pretty much pay to play at a club, or they have to sell so many tickets, and it's really a kind of a sad situation on that hand.
It is sad, and it's ridiculous, and it should be against the law.
It should.
So, yeah. So now, what was, like, your most popular local band that you were in? Like, were you ever in a local band that you felt like you guys had some level of success?
Not really, because they're mainly cover bands. But I did go on the road with, remember Fabian, the 1950s star?
Yeah, I remember Fabian, too. I'd be in love with Fabian.
Right, Fabian. And then I went on with Little Anthony. That was a sweet gig, you know, because we'd fly out for the East Coast for like 4 days, come back. And, I played with him for about a year and a half, I think. And that was kind of a big deal. That was kind of like the big pro move for me. You know?
Now, that was a big deal. You're talking about Little Anthony and the Imperials, right?
Right. And this
so
is
now,
like
how did you get that gig?
You know, I don't know. I just kind of stumbled upon it, and I guess I went down on audition. They said, yeah, this guy's cool. And it was Anthony and the New Imperials, but it was just basically Little Anthony and this the band behind him, the four of us.
Oh, okay. You know what? I love Lil Anthony and the Imperials, and so
that must have been
another level for you, you know, to be able to gig with him.
Right. Yeah, it was. Like I said, it was like a step up. It was a step up from the clubs, you know. Now we were playing like venues, and people were actually coming to see, you know, you play and stuff. And yeah, it was fun. It was definitely a lot of fun.
And you know, and of course, you probably do know that he's still gigging in Vegas a lot.
Is he really? I didn't know that.
Yeah. You know that? Wow. Oh, yes. He is still at it. And I believe he lives in Vegas, and he is doing it, you know, still in there till the wheels fall off. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah. Exactly.
Until the wheels fall off.
I'll have to look him up. Wow, that's great.
Yeah. So now, tell me this. Rick James, how did that happen? How did you get involved with Rick James?
Well, I was playing in a band.
Tell us from the beginning to the end.
Yeah. Okay. I was playing in a band, a local band, just a club band, cover band. And we did some originals. But anyway, the keyboard player at the time was married to Lisa Sarna, the background singer. And they said they were looking for a guitar player. And she recommended me to come down and play. So I did, and Rick heard me, and he liked me, and that was it, you know. And the next thing I know, I'm in rehearsing for this tour, the Bustin' Out Tour. And that's how it all started.
Well, tell me this. Did you know anything about Rick before you auditioned?
You know, I knew he had Mary Jane out, and when I heard that I was going to go down and play, I immediately went out and got the album and listened to all the songs, of course, and kind of did a little bit of woodshedding, you know, so I wasn't caught off guard. But, Hollywood, you know, Mary Jane, you know, and it was a lot of good tunes on that album, you know.
Yeah, so now, how did it feel when you got that gig? I mean, did you realize that, you know, what the level that you were going to, or was this just another gig, or did you realize that, okay, this is something that's getting ready to be big, or what? How was that like to get that gig?
Yeah, basically it was like, I'm called up to the big leagues, now it's time to bat, you know, and it was like, it's a big deal, you know, you got a big tour, it's a really a pro thing, you know, and if something I kind of dreamed about going on tour, you know, and a big tour, you know, and all of a sudden here it is, it hits. And, it was really an exciting time because right after we started doing rehearsals, you know, there was a TV show I think we did, and it was like all of a sudden, wow, here it is, you know, the stardom type of thing happened. You know?
Okay, so now what was your first impression? What was it like? Let me put it this way. What was it like when you first met Rick? When you are one-on-one, what was that like? Because, those of us who know a little bit about Rick, we know that he was a character. So what was that like to meet Rick James and, you know what I'm saying, as far as his personality goes?
Yeah, he was very nice, very cordial, and not like the Rick that I got to know later on, the crazy guy, but he was very nice and very supportive, you know, and just it made me feel really welcome to be in the situation. And, it was just a real honor to, you know, I felt really welcomed and felt really good to be in this band. And it was definitely a great experience.
Well, that's good because it had to be, did you have a little, like, anxiety being ready to meet him, you know what I'm saying?
Were you a little nervous
about meeting him?
No, not at all, actually. No, I was up for the task, and, it was great because he made you feel so comfortable, you know, that got rid of the anxiety if I didn't have any, you know.
Okay, well, that's cool.
You know, and I felt confident in my ability. Yeah, I felt confident in my ability also, you know.
Right. Okay, so what was it like? Okay, his music was labeled punk funk. That's what they called it, punk funk. I don't know if that's what they were calling it when you got in the band. So what was it like? Because you were like into the Rolling Stones, and you had, and you liked Wes Montgomery. You know, you were listening to him. So what was it like playing this new kind of music that I'm assuming that you had, you were doing covers and stuff, but this right here, this was, this had the funk label on it. So what was that like?
It was no big deal, you know, because actually some of the other bands I was playing in, we were doing some funk stuff like the Brothers Johnson. We did some other funk. I can't think of anything off the top of my head, but
did you do any Grand Central Station?
Yeah, we did Grand Central Station. You know,
what'd you do? You probably can't remember what you did.
No, I can't.
Okay, I'm just glad to hear that you did some Grand Central Station. Okay, very good. Because is funk. Grand Central Station is funk. Okay,
can you handle it? Was that it?
Yep, that's it.
Yep,
can you handle it?
Yeah,
sure.
There you go. Okay.
All right. Okay, that's, you get a gold star right there.
Yeah.
All right, so funk was not new to you. If you were doing Grand Central Station, funk was definitely not new to you. So you were, like you said, up to the task. You had done your homework, so it was all good. Okay,
right.
So now we're getting ready to play You and I. Can you tell me a little bit about You and I?
You and I, it starts with the guitar doing an F-sharp octave. I didn't play on this tune.
That's for all the musicians that are listening. You guys hear
right,
that?
Yeah, right.
Okay.
So a guy named Alan, I forget Alan's last name at the moment, but he played guitar on it. That was one of Rick's first hits. And, it's a smoker.
Okay, so you didn't actually record that. That was done before you got in the band.
Right. That was Rick's first album. That was actually before the Stone City Band was formed and all that. So that was his first
album. His first album, there was no Stone City Band.
No, not really, no. He just called it, he had side musicians, and that's what he called it.
So by the time you joined the group, it was the Stone City Band.
Right. Actually, the Stone City Band came into play when we signed with Motown, the band itself. We had three albums out.
So now, I'm curious about where the name came from, the Stone City Band. Where did that name come from? Do you know?
No, probably getting stoned, you know, from Mary Jane. You know? Probably. That's a good guess. You know.
Well, that's a good enough reason for me, okay? So
yeah.
So You and I is from the what album now?
It's, I'm sorry, say again?
You and I came off of what album?
That was Rick's very first album, I think, Come and Get It.
Come and Get It? Okay, you are listening to You and I on Everybody Is a Star. Damn.
Okay, cool.
Hey.
Yeah, yeah. I was doing the Egyptian to that. Oh, yeah.
So, now, here's what I want to ask you. Like, about what year would you, can you remember the year you started with Rick?
I think it was 1979.
79.
Yeah,
okay.
Yeah.
All right.
I believe so.
So now here in 2014, you are still playing Rick James's music. That's a long time.
That's a long time. That's a lot of time to be playing
time.
You and I. And yeah. But people are digging it.
Let me ask you something. That's what I was getting ready to ask you. What, you know, like, you have seen music go through so many changes, so many levels, because, you know, as I was doing my research, Rick sort of did even some kind of disco-y type thing that during the 80s, you know, trying to, you know, stay relevant. So, like, during your journey through the music, and you aren't finished because you're still doing it, what do you see, what is the biggest difference to you from then, you know, when you first started out to now? And that's a lot of years. But, you know, and a lot of changes in music have been made. But to you, what is the most significant thing?
The biggest thing is the onset of the Internet, and there's basically no more record companies. Unlike it used to be, where you go in and the record company would shove out some money to do an album. But today there's none of that. You pretty much have to do it all yourself and promote yourself and promote through the Internet. And, yeah, it's and plus live music, there's really not that much of it out there these days like it was when I was growing up and then doing the club scene in the 70s and 80s.
Right.
You know, I mean, that's a big deal right there.
Right.
But, you know.
And absolutely. And that's why I'm doing what I do, because, you know, it's a mission of mine to keep the, not only the funk alive, because, you know, that's my genre, but just to keep real music alive. You know what I'm saying? And to do whatever I can to support those who are out there who are still playing real music, because I know that when you guys get out there on your gigs and stuff, and you guys hit, like, you don't even have to go into, all you have to do maybe is hit, like, maybe three or four, not even a bar, just two or three notes to a song that everybody knows that are Rick James fans, and you hit those two or three notes, and people are screaming and hollering.
Yeah, yeah, they dig it. Yeah, exactly.
Yeah, already.
I mean, the stuff is still, you know, like that we're just playing you and I, you know, I'm like doing the dance, you know.
I'm over here trying to remember that I got to come back and finish this show, you know, because I want it's hard to be still, you know what I'm saying?
Exactly.
So the good thing about it that's still happening and hopefully will continue to happen, because that's how real music will stay alive, is that you still have fans out there who have to have that real music. They have to have everything that goes with it, that feeling. It's a feeling that you get when a band gets on the stage and hits those songs, your favorite songs of your favorite artists, one after the other after the other. You know, there's no other feelings. You know,
absolutely.
And as a musician, it must be like so fulfilling to be able in these days and times when music is like kind of suffering, if you ask me, to be able to still bring that energy and receive that energy back from your audience.
Yeah, there's nothing better than to look out in the audience and see people standing up and dancing and grooving and enjoying themselves. I mean, that really makes me happy, and it really makes you, you know, think, wow, I'm glad to be doing this, glad to be making these people happy.
Right,
and, you know,
glad to be a part
it, you know?
Of that. That's absolutely
exactly.
Right. And a few years ago, I saw you guys at the Long Beach Funk Fest. Do you remember that?
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. And you guys threw down. I just want to say that it was all good. You guys had the people partying, like in the hot sun in the middle of the daytime. And that's what music does. And I just want to thank you so much for everything that you are still out there, because you've been out there a long time. And I just want to thank you that you are still out there. And you're probably going to do like me. You're probably going to die on stage like Johnny Guitar Watson and...
That would be a good way to go. I could dig that. Yeah, I wouldn't
and
mind that at all.
Me neither. I wouldn't mind that at all. And so I have more of the fellas waiting online to come on, but I just want to say thank you very much. And in the interim, I'm getting ready to play your song, Ken Soldier. Can you tell me a little bit about the one that you wrote? Can you tell me a little bit about that?
Yeah, Ken Soldier is just kind of like a jazz fusion sort of thing that I came up with, and Rick was able to let me put it on the album, you know. I was really thankful for that. We had a guy named Michael Narada Walden. He plays drums on it. Yeah, and he came up with the title. He said, it reminds me of like a tin soldier. So there goes the title right there, you know.
That's so cool that Rick... Now, which album is this on?
I think that was on the Out from the Shadows.
I'm gonna take your word for it.
Okay.
Okay. So we're going to go into that, and I want to thank you once again so much for joining me. It's been a pleasure, and I hope to see you guys, soon here, in Southern California, real, real soon.
Exactly. Well, thanks for having us.
No problem. We are going into Ken Soldier right now.
Thank
you. Here we go. Bam.
Whoa.
trying to keep up with that. So, yeah, I got that. All right, so here we go. Band member number two, I'm just so excited. Next we have Mr. I hope I'm pronouncing this right. This has been bothering me all day. Lannis Hughes, he was the original percussion player for the Stone City Band. Are you there?
Yes, I'm here. How you doing?
Did I say your name right?
Yes, you did. You said it right. A lot of people mess it up, but you said it correctly.
I'm so glad that's over with. I'm like, oh my God. You should see the way I had it written down so that I could make sure that I said it right. How are you doing tonight, my brother?
I'm doing fine. How about yourself?
Good. So, now we're going to start for, have you been listening so far?
I didn't hear that.
I said, have you been listening so far to the show?
Oh, yes.
Did you hear, Tom?
Yes, I have. I heard 10
right,
soldiers.
Cool. Okay, so now it's your turn. So let's start from, you know, where you hail from, where you were born and raised.
I was born and raised in Buffalo, New York.
All right, Buffalo. Okay,
yes.
So shout out your school right quick. Shout out your schools right quick. What school did you go to?
Kensington High School.
Okay. That's it? Give me a middle school.
Middle school. Okay, I went to school 19, and the school before that was school 74.
Yeah, because you know people love to be able to relate. They love to say, "Oh, he went to that school. That's my school. I went to too." So you know, I like to do that so that you know everybody can feel connected. You know what I'm saying?
No problem.
Now, what were your first musical influences? When did you become aware of music?
When I started listening to the Beatles and James Brown.
Okay.
When I saw the Beatles and Ed Sullivan, that kind of threw a little spark in because I was just playing the snare drum at the time.
Mm-hmm.
And when I saw them perform and I saw the crowd reaction, I said, that's something I would like to do. Then I got turned on to James Brown.
You said you were playing the drums. So now how did that happen? How did you start playing the drums? How did that happen?
My father taught me how to play drums, and I started off on the Quaker Oats oatmeal boxes.
Okay. So that's what I'm talking about. When I say your musical influences, that's where I want to go back to. I want to go back to the Quaker oatmeal box and your father. Mm-hmm. So that's where it started. So now how old were you when you decided, what was it in you that made you decide that you wanted to play the drums?
When I got to be about 6-7 years old, when I first was watching the Ed Sullivan Show and watching James Brown on TV, and I got to go to my very first concert was James Brown, Don't Be a Dropout, which was a 99 cent, and it was at a Memorial Auditorium in downtown Buffalo. 99 cent was the admission.
And how old were you?
I was about 7 years old.
So your dad took you?
My mom.
Oh, your mom took you. She liked James Brown.
Took me and my brother and my sisters. Yes. And we
Wait a minute. I'm still trying to get past the 99 cents. Let me just absorb that for a minute. Because I know James wasn't the only one on the show. It had to be somebody else on the show too, right?
Yes, it was. I don't remember it over
there. Right. You don't remember them, but you remember James. But for James and some other folks, it was only 99 cents. Okay, I got it. Okay, so you went to go see James Brown, and then what?
That performance just left me with my mouth hanging open, and I made a deciding point at that time. I wanted to be in a band. And
mm-hmm.
Just like James Brown Band. So I got together with some local musicians around my neighborhood, and we participated playing James Brown music. And we played Cold Sweat and everything. That seemed to be the song that we kept playing continuously. After that, had a Cold Sweat drum beat. I didn't play the actual drum beat on other records. I always played the Cold Sweat beat. Except I got into rock music. I got into rock music, playing Led Zeppelin and Vanilla Fudge and all that. Ozzy Osbourne and, you know.
So now, let me get this right. Let me see if I'm hearing you right. How old were you when you first put your first band together?
I was about 12 at that time.
You were 12?
Yes.
And you put your band together, and you guys were playing James Brown?
Yes.
Okay. Yes. So now what kind of functions, because I know you must have done some local things around town, what kind of functions were you doing at 12? That's a very early age. So what were you guys doing?
All I could do at that time was school talent shows because I was not old enough to go into clubs at that time.
Right.
Mm-hmm. So that was all. We basically played the talent shows in all the schools around the neighborhood.
Right. So did you win the talent shows is the question?
Yes, we did.
That's what I'm saying.
Yes, we won.
Because I'm getting ready to ask you an even harder question. Can you remember what the name of the band was?
No,
that was a pregnant pause right there.
Yes.
Well, that's all right. That's all right. Don't make no difference because you guys won, and that's all that counts. Okay, so now you're doing talent shows and winning at 12 years old. You got your band together. So where did you go from there?
I took a slight break because at that time I was trying to be an editorial cartoonist.
Okay.
And that was my first passion, was drawing, you know. So I took like a 2-year break from playing. And then I got back into playing again. This time I was in high school. And we were playing around town. We was doing weddings and, you know, little parties, banquets around town. And I started playing on different drummers around the neighborhood. I started playing on their drum sets. And I wind up better than them. And so my name started getting around. And I got offers from bands to perform with them. And one thing led to another, and I got to
play Now, Buffalo, I've only been to Buffalo a couple of times gigging there, you know, so going in and going out. And all I remember about Buffalo is that it was very, very cold. That's what I remember about Buffalo. So, but a lot of great musicians have come out of Buffalo.
Yes. Grover Washington, Spira Gyra, a few.
And the list goes on and on.
Yes,
what I have learned about, you know, areas like that, small areas, like a lot of times there is, you know, like in small communities, small areas and stuff, towns like that, is not a lot to do, especially for, you know, African Americans, you know, black kids and stuff, you know, they trying to, you know, stay out of trouble. So usually they're either doing music or sports. And so therefore a lot of music comes out of places that you wouldn't really, that you're surprised to hear that, you know, that is coming out of there. You know what I'm saying? Like a whole bunch of music, you know, came out of Ohio. You know what I'm saying? So for Buffalo, a lot of music came out of Buffalo because that was something to do to, you know, like you know, keep yourself occupied, right? Am I correct?
Yep. You're correct.
Keep yourself occupied and keep yourself out of trouble. So what better way to do it than music?
Yes, and Buffalo, at that time, we had a local hero also, Dyke and the Blazers.
Oh, please. Now, Dyke is, like, baby, one of my all-time favorites.
Yes.
I didn't know he came out of Buffalo.
Yes, he did. Yes.
Because my thing was, like, I didn't even believe black people were in Buffalo. Because, it's like, as cold as it was, it's like, well, how did these people They, you know, how did we end up in Buffalo? It's too cold in Buffalo. But Dyke and the Blazers, I didn't know that they came out of Buffalo.
Yes. Mm-hmm.
All
Funky
right.
Broadway.
That's what I'm saying. Yes. Okay. So so now here you are. You have a name. You're a local celebrity. You're like this big fish in a little pond, right?
Right.
Okay. So now you have a brother also. So now were you and your brother in groups together?
One group we was in together, but most of the time he was always in a larger group who was playing, you know, in clubs and everything, and they were called the Ultimate Experience.
Oh, okay. So so I'm taking it that he was your big brother.
Yes.
Oh, okay.
Yes.
So the big brother was in the Ultimate Experience.
Yes.
I heard that. So that was something to aspire to. Was there like this little sibling, you know, of course, loving rivalry going on?
Not really, because at that time I was playing rock music and he was playing R&B music.
Oh, okay. So you doing your own thing.
Yes.
Okay,
yes.
I got it.
But the only battle we had was we only had one drum set. So we fought over that, who was going to use the drum set.
Okay, so you must have won. You won?
No, he won because he had better gigs. He was going, like, to New York City and down south. And
oh, okay.
I was just in the neighborhood.
Oh, okay. So we had to give him that one. That was one we had to give him. Okay, cool.
Yeah.
So, but I can imagine that by your big brother being a musician and you know, like you said, having these gigs on another level, that was a big inspiration for you.
Yes, it was. Because it actually, the group he was playing with was called The Cause at the time. And Levi Ruffin was a vocalist in that group, who was the musical director at the time.
Okay.
And my brother had took a leave of absence from the group because he had, you know, to work another job. He was working at a television station.
Okay.
And that left the chair open. And they heard me rehearsing one day in the basement, and they asked me to fill in for my brother. And
mm-hmm.
I said, yes, because I had nothing but time, so hey, I knew how to learn the show. And I learned the show, and I went out working with him. And I wound up being better than my brother, and I wound up getting the gig permanently.
Okay, that must have felt good. Come on, didn't that feel a little good?
Yes, it did. It means I was going in the right direction.
Right. Okay, very good. So now we are going to fast forward a little bit to, I think I've covered where you started and how your career was going and your brother inspired you. So now let's talk about how you got hooked up with Rick James. How did that happen?
Through Levi Ruffin, Rick James came to one of our band rehearsals and he was listening to us. And at that time, he had just put out a record called Get Up and Dance. And when we would perform around town, he would come to our shows and we would invite him up to sing that song and we would play the music behind him.
Mm-hmm.
And one thing led to another. He went to record an album. He did half an album. He got some local musicians around town. They went in the studio, recorded, and he came out with the Come Get It album. And so it really hit big on the Motown label. So he didn't really have a band at that time. He just, you know, hired musicians to go in and record.
Right.
So while that band was recording the music, we were down south performing at that time. But by the time we came back, he needed a band. So he asked Levi Ruffin. He was the first one to get hired. Then his wife got hired. So he needed a rhythm section, and he asked Levi to find him some players, and Levi threw my name in the hat. So I got a chance to go and audition, and my audition was to record Tina Marie's first album. And
okay.
Rick said, if it does good, if Barry Gordy likes it, he said, we will become the band. So we go
okay.
in the studio, we recorded the album, he took it to Barry, Barry loved it. And he gave me a phone call, he said, hey, the job is yours if you want it. Of course, I'd like to jump through the ceiling when I got the call.
That's what I was getting ready to say. How did that feel?
That felt excellent. I knew I had did something right, you know, after all
okay.
that bullshit and in the basement, to come from the basement into an actual recording, you know, and be on the record.
And right,
that
and that is so important. You said a key word. You said wood shedding, which
yes.
today, if you would say that word to a lot of so-called, quote-unquote, artists today,
they
if you would ask them what wood shedding means, they look at you like you were crazy. Like
yes.
they never heard that word before. So that is so crucial to, you know, honing your craft and longevity.
Yeah.
So now let me ask you this. So you said that, I'm trying to go back now. You said that when you used to play in bands around town that Rick would come up and sing.
Yes.
So now did you, like, know him at that time, or was he just coming up and singing? What I'm trying to find out is what kind of person was he as he was up and coming, you know, what kind of characters and, you know, personality and stuff as he was up and coming, not after he became James, you know what I'm saying, but as he
right.
was going up that ladder, what was it like working with him?
It was great working with him because he had plenty of knowledge. He was always telling us exactly what was going on and to be aware of your surroundings, you know. And he came to us, you know, with a lot of musical history.
Mm-hmm.
And he opened the door for us. He told us, you know, certain things, and he gave us, you know, advice on how to go about, you know, performing, your presentation, your audience response, and he gave us advice inside the studio. He took us in the studio, recording studio, and he worked with us and recorded two songs with the band I was with. He was very knowledgeable, and we loved being around him. He was secretive, yet, you know, he knew what he was talking about, you know, because
okay.
he was very, very intelligent. You know, he spoke straightforward, you know, and he was down to earth. He didn't beat around the bush. He wasn't trying to play games with you. You know, he was straightforward, and he let you know what you was doing wrong and what you was doing right. You know,
mm-hmm.
he was like a father figure.
Okay,
know,
like an awesome mentor.
Yes, yes.
Okay, so now he grew up. Did he grow up in Baltimore? Buffalo also?
Yes, he did.
Okay, so had you known about him before? Did you know that this was what he was doing before, you know, he actually used to come up and join you guys on stage? Did you,
no,
was,
I didn't.
Like, was it in the air that, you know, there was a Rick James in town, homeboy, that was doing his thing?
No, I had no knowledge of him. Only what
okay.
Levi used to tell us, because they grew up together.
Mm-hmm.
Levi knew him before the rest of the band, and he's the one
okay.
that introduced us to him.
Okay. All
mm-hmm.
right. All right. So now we're getting ready to play Mary Jane, which is one of my all-time favorite
all right.
Rick James songs. I love that song. Can you tell us anything about that?
Mary Jane was a play on words. You took it either way.
Right,
but
yeah, well,
that,
you know that,
that was,
yeah.
That was a very big song on that album. It really was the crossover tune for Rick at that time.
And it was huge. It was huge. And
yes.
I wonder what, because of course we all knew what Rick was talking about, but
mm-hmm.
It's something about the vibe of the music that really, you know, pulls me in. But that did you say that was a crossover tune?
Yes, it was. For him,
so
it was a huge crossover.
So that means that everybody was listening to it.
Yes, it was. Yes. Especially the college kids.
Okay, so was that one of your, was that a tune that you in particular, like, did you have tunes? Because and when you're in band, there are certain tunes on the set list that you can't hardly wait to get to. So was Mary Jane one of them for you?
Yes,
or
was.
Not?
Yes.
Oh, it was? Okay,
it was.
Okay,
Mary
cool.
Mary Jane and
all right.
You and I.
And you and I, okay, because you know, when I was doing shows, you know, I was with this little group called Grand Central Station, and when we would do shows, and the set list would be right there in front of us, it was like, ooh, I can't wait to get this one right here. So, yeah, there are always favorites, you know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
Okay, so Mary Jane is one of my favorite Rick James tunes, and so here we go. Mary Jane, everybody in the star, bam. Hey.
Yes.
I almost want to play that one all over again. Okay, all right. Here we go. I'm back. So now we have callers on the line. I'm gonna take a call. Is that all right with you?
Yes, it is.
Okay, so we got area code 909. Caller, are you there? Area code 909.
Hello.
Hi.
I think
I know
you.
Is this is this Captain Z?
Yes, it is.
Okay. You are probably already know this brother, right?
Yep.
Okay, well, y'all just go. This is Zelda.
Zelda.
Nova. Yeah, this is Zelda. So question or comment? Go ahead. Have your way, girl.
I have no questions. That's my family. That's my family, ride or die. We roll until the wheels fall off.
I heard that. And I just want to say that Zelda was very crucial in her part that she played to make this interview happen, because she said to me, Stone City Band. I said, okay, well, that's cool. Help me. Let's get this thing hooked up. And so we got it hooked up. And so it's, you know, initially because of her that we are talking to one another. And I am so glad, because I have been wanting to hook up with you brothers for a while. So thank you.
Much.
And Zelda is also captain of Team Chocolate.
All right. Thank you, Zelda.
You're welcome. I love you guys. See you soon, hopefully.
All right.
Okay, girl, thank you. All right. So now what we're going to do is we're going to play another song, and when we come out of that song, we will have Jimmy on the phone, hopefully. That's the plan, to have Jimmy on the phone. So now I want to thank you so much. You have been very forthcoming. Your information is so interesting. Just, I wanted to find out, we all know that you worked with Rick James, but I wanted to find out a little bit about each of you individually. You know what I'm saying? And so that was my purpose. And so this has been great. I have thoroughly enjoyed it, and I want to thank you so much. And y'all just keep on doing what you're doing. And like I asked Tom, you've been in this now for however many years, I don't know how many. What, from the time you started until now, the when you go out there and you play those songs, that energy, is it still the same? Is it, you know, worthwhile? Is it still rewarding? You know what I'm saying? How does it feel to be able to continue to, you know, keep this funk alive?
The energy is great. The response is overwhelming, and I'm so glad that we're able to come back on stage and perform to let people hear the hits that they grew up and listened to. And we just enjoy playing. That's our whole mission, to perform and have fun. Our energy on stage is definitely there, and we like it when the audience participate with us, because we're a fun, funk, and roll band, and we love
absolutely.
The audience wherever we go.
Absolutely. So if you had any advice to give those who are up and coming right now, what would you say, young artists who are serious about music, what would you say?
The main thing I would say to all up and coming artists, learn the business side of the music biz. Don't look at the visual part, all the dancing girls and all the crowd and everything. Learn the business first. That's the main thing. And then learn your craft.
Depend on
machines to work your magic. You got to learn how to play yourself. Play straight from the heart. Don't let a machine do your playing.
That is because a machine can't do your playing. How can a machine play? You know what I'm saying? That won't work. And so, you know, if we want the music to continue to go on, you know, us, you know, of our generation, if we want to keep it alive, that's what we have to do. We have to encourage. See, the thing about it is getting them to realize and understand that keyword wood shedding. You must work
yes.
at it. If it's coming fast, it ain't going to last.
No, it won't.
You know what I'm saying? No, it's not going to last. So you got to learn. You got to put that work in. You got to sweat. You got to get funky. You got to do all of that. And so that was very solid advice, and I thank you so much. And can't wait to see you guys live again. I hope you're going to be doing something in Southern California anytime soon.
Yes, we're working on it. Try to get there by the fall.
Okay, that sounds good. That sounds good. Well, just make sure you put my, you know, make sure your people have some comp tickets aside for chocolate.
Hey, you definitely going to be on the list. Definitely. But I have one more thing. I have one more thing, chocolate. I have one more thing to say. Always, always bless the man upstairs. Without him, you'll never go anywhere.
And you know what? Thank you so much for saying that, because guess what? He is the one that the talent and all the gifts come from. You know, we could wake, I could wake up tomorrow and open my mouth and not sing a note. You could wake up tomorrow and not even be able to lift your arms, because none of this is in our control. It's all about giving honor to where the resources and the gifts come from. So thank you so much for that. So much for that. And I appreciate you. And may the funk be with you. And what we're getting ready to play now is Give It To Me, Baby. So do you have any little tidbits you can drop about Give It To Me, Baby?
Give It To Me, Baby is the rhythmic funk and roll dance tune. Straight from the soul.
All right. Well, then that's good enough for me. You heard it here on Everybody Is a Star. Bam. Give it to me, baby.
Thank you, Patrice.
Thank you.
Bye.
And
got
to
see.
Home last night.
Oh, man.
You wouldn't make it to me. You went fast asleep.
You
wouldn't even talk to me. You say I'm so crazy.
You and that deal with
you. Come
to
home intoxicated. I said, damn, I want to love you.
I thought it was.
Let's go.
Give it to me right away. Give it to me. Ow! Give it to me. Hey! All right. Woo! Didn't know he was doing it. He knew he was doing it. So, our next guest is going to be Mr. Jimmy Ali. Are you there, Jimmy?
How you doing, sweetie?
I'm tired. I'm over here jamming. I just can't. I'm barely trying. I can't hardly catch my breath. I'm dancing on the songs and trying to, you know, be a hostess and all that.
You got to get going. You know that.
You know, Rick got me. Rick, y'all got me going over here. You know, how are you doing tonight? How are you doing?
I'm doing fine. You know, you just got me reminiscing about, I should be interviewing you.
What?
No, because I seen you back in, what, 1974, 75, because I'm originally from Detroit, Michigan.
Okay,
you know,
okay, I love Detroit.
Yeah, and you guys, I mean, I saw you with Larry Graham.
Right.
You and your funk machine, your funk box.
Me and my funk box.
And you was keeping it funky.
My F-U-N-K box.
Oh, my goodness, girl. I mean, I love it, man. You know, you're talking about serious history right here. You don't need to be interviewing me. I mean, yeah, definitely the original Stone City Band. Them are my boys, you know. Be part of the
well, the thing about it is that I appreciate you, my brother, because, yes, we were all out there then at the same time. I know all about you. I know your history. I know all about P-Funk. I know what's going on. So we was all doing it, you know, at the same time in Grand Central Station. You can interview me anytime you want to. You got a show. Just, you know, we can do it. We can do the bad gum thing. You know what I'm saying? But tonight, we are talking about Mr. Jimmy Ali. How are you doing? I'm so, this is an important time to me because I can't believe 10 years have passed. So this is an important time to me, and I want to honor this brother's memory. And so I want to get, if you've been listening, you know that I've been trying to squeeze every bit of information out of everybody with the little time that I do have. So now it's your turn. So are you ready?
Well, you know what? I'm honored to be part of this organization, you know, the original Stone City Band. Actually, Rick James, the original Stone City Band. You know,
right.
As MD, I find myself, you know, compelled to preserve the legacy of Rick James and the original Stone City Band. And
right.
To the music industry by keeping
all
the
right.
Phone, you know, it's and then, you know, you have master percussionist Nate Hughes, master funk drummer Lannis Hughes, and then master guitarist Tom McDermott. These are some of the guys that, you know, started this whole thing with Rick. So, you know, it's an honor for me to be part of
it. I hear you. So now let's go back to where you started. You just told me that Detroit is your hometown. That's where you came from?
Yes.
Okay. All right. So now shout out your schools. Let us know what schools you went to in Detroit.
Well, I went to James Verner in elementary. I grew up on the East Side. Right. I went to Mumford High School, which is a school that Earl Clue and, you know, a bunch of other great artists came out of that high school. I started playing bass probably in, let me back up. I started playing classical guitar first. I have a twin brother. You know, I don't want to get into that because this is not about me and him. You know, but we both played guitar early, like maybe in 68, 69.
So both of you guys played guitar. That's
right.
Interesting. Now, what were your first musical influences like? When did you first, when did music first, like, attack you? Because, you know, music attacks you. And after it attacks you, there's nothing you can do about it. It's just, you just are held in submission for the rest of your life. So when did you first realize that music was what you wanted to do?
You know what? I have older sisters, and they would come home and bring certain, you know, records and stuff, 45s, and it was like Marvin Gaye and just all the, you know, all the Motown greats. Being raised in Motown lends itself to me being able to hear a lot of stuff firsthand.
Right, right.
You know, I was, you know, as I got older, you know, I mean, I'm jumping the gun here. I mean, I, you know, grew up around like Eddie Kendricks, David Ruffin, and people like that. Definitely James Jamerson. Then after James Jamerson, it was Larry Graham. It was like, you know, he just took over me. It was like after that, it was like, you know, I got to play like Larry Graham.
He took over every bass player, all of them. After Larry, everybody had to play like Larry. So I totally understand that.
Yeah, and after I had the opportunity of meeting him in 1979 at one of the world's greatest funk festivals, which Rick James and the original Stone City Band was part of that, it was just amazing, you know. And I told him about, I saw you guys as a teenager, and you were in that band at that time. So, that's what I'm saying. You are a major influence and force in the whole funk scene. So, you know, we love you, Chocolate.
Well, thank you very much, my brother. So now, so you started out playing guitar.
Yeah, I know I skipped the subject, but.
That's all right, because I'm on it. You see, I'm on it. So you started out playing guitar. So now, how did it transition into the bass? How did that happen?
Well, we were, at that time, we were listening to Jimi Hendrix, Sly and the Family Stone. And those kind of acts. And then my brother, we were in my father's basement. He was like, you know, he did the Jedi mind trick on me. So he was like, you know what? I'm a better guitar player. You know what? You need to play bass. You need a bass player. So he tricked me into that one. So I started playing bass and didn't really know much about the instrument, but I fell in love with just those four strings. And now I'm playing like 5- and 6-string bass right now. So
okay.
Yeah, you know, that was that whole scene.
So that's how that happened. Hello?
Yeah, I'm here. I'm just waiting
for
the...
So that's so that's how you got into playing bass. Okay. So now, did you like form your own group? Did you and your brother play together locally as teenagers? Mm-hmm. Or how did that grow? I'm trying to see how your career progressed.
Okay, I actually used to take lessons from a guy by the name of Ron Hicks. He played with the Paul Butterfield Blues Band at Woodstock. He just recently passed away a few years ago. You know, I took lessons for a while with him, and then I began to start playing with, you know, different people around town in Detroit. You know, Aretha Franklin's sister, Carolyn Franklin. I worked with Aretha for a while. They took us to Motown, and I don't think we were quite, at that time, back in those days, ready for the big times. But you know what? Some years passed, and then we were introduced to George Clinton, and then, you know, I worked with them and then start writing for Parlette, The Brides.
And what was that like? I just got to ask you, what was that like in that camp? That George Clinton camp.
You know, it was fun and it was funky. You know, we had a good time. We all loved each other and respected each other, and we listened, and it was all about the funk. And you know, it could be some crazy times just as well.
Of course.
And you know what? Be some of that other stuff that's, you know, in the air.
Right. Well, you know, it was a part of the culture. I mean, you know. You know, it was just some things that came with it, you know, but that's always been from the beginning of time, you know, in the culture of, like, rock music, funk music, just playing music, period, because it can go way, way, way back to, like, Billy Holiday and even back further than that, you know.
Yeah.
there are, you know, there are things, there are elements that are just involved with music, and those elements are, you know, they like to boil it down to sex, drugs, and rock and roll. But for sure, you know, for sure, that's the truth. I mean, you know what I'm saying? That comes with it. It just comes with it, and that's all there is to it. So, and I imagine working with George was pretty wild, because George, you know, was pretty wild. So I know that had to be, like, a very interesting part of your career.
Yeah, it was. You know, and to bring it up to date, we as Stone City Band, I just had a meeting with George and Ron Dunbar, which was the writer of Band of Gold, Free to Pain.
Right.
Yeah, and they just came over a couple of days ago. So we're looking to do some things with the original Stone City Band as far as touring. And also we're original Stone City Band. We're in the studio trying to work on some new, you know, music and to present, you know, to the public, so we can get that new, whole new generation thing happening, so they can find out once again, you know, who was the original Stone City Band, because, you know, we have a whole new generation of people that really don't know, and that's the whole thing about keeping the funk alive.
Exactly, and that's why I do this show, Everybody is a Star, to keep that history alive, to let people know, because, you know, especially around this time of the year, the summertime, you know, they have all these different funk festivals and funk this and funk that, and they are quick to label something funk, and then when you go to the event, funk has nothing to do with it. So that gets on my last nerves. So that is why I am doing what I'm doing, because I want to keep the history alive. I want people to know what they are talking about, because as far as funk music goes, to me, it's like one of the most underrated genres of music. And I don't know, understand why, because if it were not for funk music, you know, after funk, funk was the foundation of everything after it. You know what I'm saying? So how can you, like, ignore funk music? You can't do it, especially with as long as I'm breathing. You can't do it. I ain't going to let it happen. You know what I'm saying? So it's very important, and that's why it's very important what you guys are doing. Now, I want to hear about the transition from, I don't know if you went, what you went through after P-Funk, and what was that like before you got to Rick? But tell me about that.
After P-Funk, I started working with, I don't know if you remember a group in the 70s called Brainstorm. Loving and Reeling is my game. We toured with Mother's Finest. I work with the guitarist.
Mother's Finest is one of my all-time favorite groups.
Yes, yes. Mm-hmm. I work with a saxophone player by the name of Ronnie Laws and guitar player by the name of Earl Clue and Bob James and Kirk Whalum. So, you know, I mean,
all of those people, yeah.
Yeah, I've worked with a lot of folks. I've been blessed to work with these people. So, I mean,
mm-hmm.
I learned, I think a lot of musicians should, you know, at a young age, you should find some time to play with whoever you can play with, so you can just grasp that information of music, so you can just, at some point, it will take care of you, you know? I mean, because some people think, well, you know, I'm just going to do this all my life, you know, but if you got other things to do to pull from some jazz or classical or rock or something, you know, you can use it even in funk.
Right.
It works.
That's right.
Yeah, because you may go into a section of a song that might consist of some, like, rock stuff, you know, or you may want to go into a part vocally where it's like some la, 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 you know, some operatic stuff. And Rick did that. He was good. George was good at that, you know. And even
George pulled every trick. George pulled every rabbit out of the hat, didn't he?
Yeah. Yes, indeed.
You're right. It goes back again to what we talked about with, everybody else tonight that we've talked to. Look at me. I'm going to get ready to tell you. But Tom
and
Larry.
Lannis, I heard
yeah, it goes back to what we said, with, you know, what we were talking about with them, is that, you know, woodshedding, you know, skills, hone your craft, you know. You know, it ain't fast. If it's fast, it don't last. And so somebody like you, you have such a extensive history, musical history, and I know you do. I might have to do interview with you just by yourself. But but let's get to Rick James. Let's get to how you got connected with Rick.
You know what? The vocalist that's in the band, we call her Baby Funk. You know, she's sitting right here. We're in the studio doing some work right now. So.
Hey, Baby Funk. Tell her I said hey.
Hey, Chocolate. What's going on, girl?
Girl, everybody is a star.
I'm listening in. I'm listening to my funk brothers, and, we're just enjoying it and trying to, just move forward to a bright,
Absolutely, girl, absolutely. Keep that funk alive and keep doing what you're doing. I want to let you know that in my research for this show, that I was looking at some YouTube clips and that I saw you, realized that you are an integral part of the group right now, and I saw you and I heard you, girl. You better do your thing, okay? Because females out there, that's another whole show, but females out there, it's very important that we continue to do what we do, because we don't get the credit that we deserve. But, you know, that's another show. Maybe you and I can do a show together. But I just want to holler at you and thank you for what you are doing.
Thank you so very much. I'm honored, and I would love to in the future.
Okay.
And I'm very blessed to be working with the boys, you know. It's an amazing opportunity. I'm originally from Hawaii, and and being, you know, in the world of funk, you know, there's not very many female funk vocalists out there that can handle their own, that they can stand on their own.
That's right. But there are some. So the ones that are out there, they need to be, I've interviewed some of them, and they need to be. See, the thing about it is that people don't understand that there are some still out there that have been out there forever, and they need the light, you know, to be shown on them, because they are, everybody is a star. And women don't get the respect, as far as I'm concerned, that they deserve, because this is a male-dominated genre. You know what I'm saying? But anyway, let me talk to Jimmy, please. I love you.
Love you, too. Hold on.
Okay,
you know I was bowing
out. She got me started. I was about to go into something, another whole thing. I'm going to have to set up an interview with her, because it's a woman thing. You know what I'm saying, my brother?
I can respect that.
That's a woman thing. I'm serious. And
you know,
there aren't very many women. I just want to say this. There aren't very many women in the funk genre. But the ones that were, you know, they need to, you know, get that, they need to get that recognition that they're due, you know, and that's what I'm all about. But right now, we talking about Rick James, because I've gotten started. I got to slow my roll. So we talking about how you got connected with Rick.
Well, yeah, as I was saying before, I got connected through Baby Funk, you know.
Okay.
They had, you know, the original bass player was Oscar Austin. And then, you
mm-hmm.
know, then, I think after that he decided to do his own project. In Buffalo, and you know, they remain great friends. We actually just saw him and his band in Buffalo. So,
okay,
you know, he's a good friend of the organization. He's a good supporter. And then I think after that was Alan McGreer, and which is, you know, Tina's bass player and songwriter,
mm-hmm.
Tina Marie. So that happened, and then I was, you know, I came in as a sub just to do a show. And then, you know, it just, it spiraled into me becoming the bass
the
player.
The MD.
Yeah, and then the MD, the musical director. And I'm so honored to have that. It's a great title. You know, it's just that all, you know, I'm just trying to, as I said earlier before, is to preserve the legacy of Rick James and the original Stone City Band's contribution to music.
Absolutely.
So, I mean,
absolutely.
That's really my whole goal is to do that. I mean, it's nothing about Jimmy Ali or anything of that nature. It's just to do that and to see this thing that we're all about, including yourself, keeping the funk alive, is to be successful in doing that, because we know the industry is what it is right now, and it's really, to me, I want to say it, it's sad.
Yeah, say it. Go ahead and say it, because guess what? I agree with you. It is sad. And as far as I'm concerned, if there were not those like you and Baby Fat and the rest of the band, you know, Stone City Band, and I went like maybe a month and a half ago to see the Family Stone, and,
okay.
You know, it's all about support. And, you know, and Gary Martini, of course, you know who he is. He will tell you in a minute that he's 71 years old. But guess what? When I went to go see them, him and Cynthia were throwing down. So what I'm saying is that, you know, whenever the authentic OGs are anywhere around, and if you call yourself slacking or into funk music, you need to go and support them, because, you know, you never can tell, you know, when you will ever hear this music again the way it's supposed to be. And I don't know if you were with them. I don't know for sure if you were with them when I saw the Stone City Band at the Long Beach Funk Fest. But anyway, okay, you weren't. But anyway, they threw down because the music was, I mean, this was Rick's band. So they were playing the music, you know what I'm saying, just like they always did. And the crowd just immediately was just sucked in, and that energy was just like everywhere, and it was electric. That's because people are starving for the real thing, the authentic thing, and that's what you are a part of, keeping that alive. And so that's why I'm so excited about this, doing this interview, because your history is so rich, and I just, you know, want to thank you so much for, you know, hanging on in there, my brother.
Thank you, my sister, so much. I mean, it's an honor to even be on the phone with you and for you to interview this organization of folks that's been in the industry as long as time.
Okay.
So, I mean, we really, really, like, enjoyed this interview. I mean, I'm lost for words right now, but, you know, Chocolate, it's an honor, you know, to be interviewed by you. I mean, this is real big. This is, you know, and it's something that's paramount for us. I mean, you know.
Wow. And I'm just having fun. So now, the next song we're getting ready to play is Cold Blooded. Now, give us a tidbit or two about Cold Blooded, because you're the MD. So, like I was saying too, man, you know, on a set list, when you look at it, there's certain songs that you can't wait to get to. So, Cold Blooded is like, Mary Jane is my favorite, but Cold Blooded is a close second. So, tell me about, you know, how you feel about this music, and do you have any favorites?
They're all my favorites. You know, I mean.
Okay.
Very passionate, as I said, in preserving this history right here. So, you know, there is no one favorite. They're all my favorite songs. They're like my little babies. It's like I want to hear the best come out of these gentlemen, and I know they still have this. You know, they are the ones that wrote and played this music. So, as I always tell them, you know, I come to them a lot of times. Is it okay? You know,
I heard that.
You know what I'm saying? Because it's got to be that way. You know, it's not what Jimmy thinks. It's just that I just kind of keep some order, you know, where in the flow of where it's going. You know, I'm not trying to say what, because I didn't write the songs. They did. Stone
right.
With this stuff. So, and it's like, you know, if they're happy, then I know we're on the right path.
Okay, that's excellent, and I love that. I love hearing that. Okay, so we're getting ready to hear Cold. Don't let me start. We're getting ready on Everybody Is a Star, Cold Blooded, with Jimmy Allen. Here we are. Bam.
Baby Fat.
Who do Well, I figure if we talk, what words could I describe? There's no dictionary book to explain how you look. Girl, I think you're so cold-blooded. What more can I say?
Hey, you know I'm over here trying to party and interview at the same time. Well, that Rick boy, he was on another level. So now here's what I would like to ask you. What advice would you give to those who are serious about music, you know, the up-and-comers? What would you tell? I've gotten advice from the rest of, you know, your bandmates. What would you tell them?
I would tell them at least go back, do your history, do your homework, spend some time listening to those, the forefathers, the four sisters, you know, like yourself, and people that were blessed with the gift of delivering the funk. You know, I think it's imperative for the young, you know, to go back, just like we have history books, you know, you have to go back and study your history. So it's imperative that they do that. You know, as a young artist, you need to go back. And I hear some of it in some of the upcoming artists. You know, they try to go back and listen to Marvin. They try to go back and listen to some of the things that you, I can hear it in the music, but not
right, right.
So influenced by the market, and you know, it's like a fashion statement to them. It's like, you know, like you said earlier, you know, it's quick and it's over with and that kind of thing. That kind of thing, you know, it's like, why?
You
know, it doesn't matter.
You know, you know what I think is, what I think is that they, there are a few, I'm not saying everybody, there's an exception to every rule, but most of them, they have to go back. They have to go back and just, you know, they pick out little pieces of little stuff that they can use right now. You know what I'm saying? Because, you know, the creative, being creative, that's almost like null and void at this point, trying to, like, sit down and come up with some stuff on your own. You know, they don't do much of that anymore. It's all about, you know, borrowing from, biting off, however you want to call it, the foundation. You know what I'm saying? And that'll work for a minute. That'll work for a minute. But those who are actually putting in the work, you know what I'm saying? Those are the ones, because, look, here you got Rick James. It's been 40-something years. His music is still relevant today. I mean, and don't let me start going down the list of people. Tina Marie, don't let me start going down the list of people who, you know, their music will be relevant from to the end of time. I mean, you know, some of their stuff is going to be put in the, you know, the what they call those things, the burying them in the space capsule so that they can send them to outer space. You know what I'm saying? So they can know what real music was on the planet Earth. You know what I'm saying?
Absolutely.
I'm talking about that kind of longevity. You know what I mean? That kind of music. Like Berry Gordy, like Motown, that kind of stuff takes work. You know, so thank you so
and
much.
You know what? I think that's where we're all at, you know, at this level.
Time capsules. That's what I was looking for. Time capsules.
The Rick James, the Larry Graham, the Graham Central Station, the Sly and the Family.
Sly.
You know, the Jimi Hendrix, you know, the Who, you know, I mean, the list can go on and on. You know, we
right.
all are part of that time capsule, you know. So
that's right. That's right, my brother. That is right. You're getting the amen from over here. So I want to say to you that,
Can I say this to you?
Yeah, go ahead.
You said baby fat, but it's baby funk.
Oh, I'm sorry. I'm so sorry. Oh, I'm truly sorry. Baby funk. Why did I not know that? Baby, and she spells it with a P-H, isn't that right?
No, with a F-U-N-K.
Okay, well, all right. Well, I got to set up an interview with her just to make amends for all the stuff I got wrong.
But you didn't get anything wrong. I just wanted to correct you, but, you know, I just wanted to see the pants.
It's all good.
You know, in a different, you know, state, so it's
that's
all
cool. Straighten me out. It's all good because I want to make sure that, you know, we get it correct. So it's all good. So thank you so much for that. You got anything else you want to say?
I got this to say. All we're trying to do is just keep this funk alive. I love you, brothers. original Stone City band. I want you guys to stay focused, and I want to be just to bring this thing alive again, you know, and I'm really focused on that. And I want to thank Chocolate for having us on her show this evening.
Yay!
And then we got Nate Hughes, master percussionist. Well.
Yeah, he's coming up next, right after we play this next song that I chose called Ghetto Life.
Oh, yeah, there you go. That's a great song.
Yeah.
So I'm
so
sorry.
When we come up,
thank you so much.
When we come out of Ghetto Life, we'll be talking to Nate, and I hope that you continue to hang on for the rest of the interview.
Oh, yeah, I am. I'm not going anywhere. I'll be right here.
Okay.
Thank you, my darling.
And Baby Funk, right? Did I get it right that time?
Yes, you did, sister.
Okay, I'm going to get back to you, okay? I'm getting back to you. You hear me?
Yes, thank you.
I'm calling
you.
We're gonna get it together. Okay, so thank you. And we are getting ready to go into Ghetto Life on Everybody Is a Star.
Hanging out on corners, singing with
Hey. What Rick said, playing tag with rhinos in the ghetto. Okay, that's what I'm talking about. So, Nate, are you there, my brother?
I am here, my
Yay!
Sister.
So, been waiting to talk to you all night long. So now,
All right. You
have heard the interview, so you know what I've been doing. I've been asking people to start from the beginning, too. But we know about you. We know that you were the big brother. We know that you were, that your younger brother was aspiring to be like you. We know that. So we don't know school. Did y'all go to the same schools?
No, we didn't go to the same schools. Well, as far as grammar schools and, we went to the same school. But high school, we went our separate ways, mainly because he went to a public, and I went to a vocational school. So I can stay focused. It was all boys school, you know, so
and
I knew
keep
I went
you
to
focused,
a public
won't
school,
it?
And you know what I mean? I was a machine shop drafting major in a vocational school.
Okay, all right, cool. So now the music bug, when did it bite you? What was up with that?
Pardon me, I didn't hear you, I'm sorry.
I said the music bug, when did it bite you? When did you understand that music was what you were supposed to do?
Well, instruments were around the house constantly. My father, my mom singing in church, and my father had various instruments around the house, and we used to just mess around with them periodically. A lot of times we would just pick them up, at any time of the day, he never forced it on us, but we would pick them up, mess around with them, try to play the records, like James Brown or whatever.
Right.
And after a while, it just became a passion. And at
mm-hmm.
8 years old, I was introduced to a drum and bugle corps, Captain Hedges, and it taught me discipline, playing in a drum and bugle corps.
Right.
We were doing steps and playing at the same time. So your coordination and discipline was an intricate part of it.
Especially for a drummer.
Mm-hmm. When you're doing steps and you can play drums, you got to be a little coordinated.
Okay, that's what I'm saying. Okay, the drum and bugle corps, that was serious. That was serious, and you couldn't get in that easily. You had to be special to do that. Okay, so now we heard that you were in the local groups around town. Everybody was aspiring to just come up to the level you were just locally.
I had the opportunity to play with a lot of local celebrities that put together some bands, in the city. One of our first bands was led by local DJ Jay Dubar, the Platter Playboy. He was one of the youngest DJs at that time.
I like that name, the Platter Playboy. Okay.
Yeah, we grew up together, Cub Scouts and all, And
mm-hmm.
He was a guitar player in the band. And him being a DJ in the band, he got all the tickets to the shows. So we went to the shows free. So we got to see all the artists that we loved, including James Brown and all.
Right. There is nothing like getting into the shows free, is there?
Oh, yeah. I think I went to every James Brown show that came to Buffalo.
Okay. And James Brown, what greater teacher than James Brown?
You broke up a little bit. I didn't hear all that.
I said James Brown. Okay, can you hear me now? Can you hear me now?
Yeah, James Brown.
I was saying, what greater teacher than James Brown? I mean, for somebody that's aspiring to be a musician and dreaming about, success in the industry, what greater person was there to study than James Brown?
Well, you know that. I mean, just watching him, you were in awe.
Right.
All the energy and the music being on point. I just love the control he had on stage. I mean, he was a total performer.
Right. And not only did he have self-control, but he controlled everybody else, didn't he?
That's right. and you better be watching.
Okay, or else you would get fined. Okay, so how did, let's go to, from this, he told me, your brother told me what the name of the band was, but I forget what it was. Everybody was trying to be, you know, get to your level. What was the name of your band, your local band?
The Cause.
I think that's what he said. Okay, so now here you are, obviously, a big fish in a little pond. So how did you go about getting connected with Rick James?
Well, you know, going back to the local group, The Cause, I was the first drummer in there, and they weren't really busy enough at that time. So what happened is that I got me a job at a television station, and my brother took my place, and I was working at a television station. Yeah, I was taking care of the commercial logs at Channel 7. And my brother, he took my place, and you know, he locked it in, you know. And they used to practice down in the basement. And one day, Rick had came down to check out the band, mainly because he had, you know, he grew up with Levi Ruffin, which was in the band.
Right.
And I was down there when he came in, because he came in from Toronto. And what he liked what he saw, and he picked the members he wanted to build around.
And you were in that number.
I wasn't in the band, but I was involved, because when he got the band together, he had a percussion player, but I was behind the scene. You know, I was like assistant music. I was assistant sound man, and my brother's drum roadie when they had the first original percussion player, you know, which was Shandu. And I was going to audition another group, but Levi told me to stay on because he didn't think Shandu was going to be there long enough. I always recorded with the group, but I wasn't in the band at the beginning.
Okay. All right.
Yeah. So when Shandu was released, I just moved on in, and I was there ever since.
All right. So tell me, what was it like working with Rick James before he was, quote, unquote, Rick James, the star? You know what I'm saying? I've been told that, you know, he was, like, very smart. You know, that's what your brother said, like a mentor, like, very encouraging, was like serious about making sure people knew about the business part of the music industry. So what was your impression and what was your experience?
He was a very intelligent brother. I learned a lot from him as far as the business. I'm telling you, I treasure all that knowledge. I mean, he introduced us to legendary players in the business as far as being in the studio. Our engineer is legendary, Tom Fly. I learned a lot of knowledge from him, just being in the studio, being a studio musician, plus hands-on in mixing. You know, he gave me the opportunity to put my hands on the board.
And that's very important. That was something that you could use forever.
Yes. And
right.
I treasure that. And if I can pass it on to some younger guys, I will do that. But they have to be passionate on, you know, into what they're doing, because it takes work. You know, it's not nothing you can just put your hands on and just do it. You have to be passionate and disciplined enough to know what you're looking to get out of it.
Absolutely, and that's what we've been saying all night. Now, according to the information that I have, the original Stone City Band like was formed in 1978 by Rick, and recording and touring with with him through the height of his career, responsible for, you know, playing like every song, every hit song that he's ever done, and also the Mary Jane Girls, playing the music for them, and many, many more. And you have the legendary band not only released their own album under Motown's Gordy label, right, for more than two decades, but provided the sounds that have been heard on recordings with Rick James, the MC Hammer, Tina Marie, The Temptations, Eddie Murphy, The Mary Jane Girls, Smokey Robinson, and that's just only to name a few. Okay?
Yes.
And the musical performances can be seen on the Grammys, the American Music and Soul Train Awards, Arsenio Hall, Jay Leno, all the night shows, all of them, Dick Clark's Rockin' New Year's Eve, countless samplings, and I know there are countless samplings, probably some that you guys have never even heard.
Very true.
I know. And so you guys have just, you know, just continuing this legacy, you guys have just been like so much a part of funk music history that I am so glad that you are continuing to do what you do and keeping this, you know, this legacy alive, because it's so important. As you have heard me say, if you've been listening to the rest, me talk to the rest of the fellas, it's so important to just, you know, keep this, your place. Funk music needs to be repositioned. It's so important because, like I said, without funk music, as far as I'm concerned, there would have been no music after funk. There wouldn't have been no hip-hop and stuff. You know, this is my opinion now. This is Chocolate's opinion. You know what I'm saying? So it's so important. It's so important. And what you are doing, you need to continue to do it, and I know you will until the wheels fall off. I know you're going to. So now, you know, what you know, do you have any advice that you would give? You've heard everybody else's advice. Would yours be the same? Do you have something different for those who are up and coming and serious about, you know, keeping real music alive?
Well, first, they have to be passionate enough to believe in what they're doing. And don't be afraid to do your research. Go back. I still research, you know.
Me too.
I'm always learning something new. You know, so as long as you're passionate enough, the countless things you can do is endless.
That's right, because passion drives you, because passion won't be satisfied until it is, you know what I'm saying, until it does what you want it to do.
If you have a desire,
it will haunt you until you fulfill it, and that's just the way it is, because they're gifts, you know, they're gifts. And wow, this has been so great. I have been able to find out so much information about each and every one of you, and I hope my listeners have found out some things that they didn't know about the individuals in the group and what it was like to actually work with Rick, you know, and how you guys got there, how you guys connected with Rick, because you guys, everybody, you guys were all, you know, musicians and doing your own thing before you hooked up with Rick and had your own histories and things you were doing before you even hooked up with Rick, and hooking up with Rick just helped his cause, you know what I'm saying? It takes a cast of characters, you know what I'm saying? Rick couldn't do it by himself. You know, he could not do it by himself. So we just thank you. Do you have any shout-outs? Do you want to shout anybody out? You're the only one that I asked about shout-outs, so try to get everybody
first,
in.
Yeah, first I want to thank you for having us on your show.
Yay!
You're a legend yourself.
Oh, well, thank you, my brother.
You know, I would like to give a shout out to Eddie, our keyboard player, Mark, our singer, Shelly Baby Funk, And I would like to let people know they can go to our Facebook page, www.facebook.com/StoneCityNation.com. And I would like to give a shout-out to Mahart Twala. And, you know, just all the young people out there, just keep that passion and just do your research. And like I said, it's endless of what you can do.
It is. And I want to give a huge shout-out to Kim. If it were not for Kim, and first of all, Zelda, we all know about Zelda. I mean, she got a supporter of funk that's out there with me. She's the one that initially gave me the hookup to Kim. Kim made it all happen. Thank you, Kim.
There you go.
Yep. Thank you so much. And so you've given us your current info. Just go to Facebook.
Yes, Facebook, www.facebook.com/StoneCityNation.com.
Okay, so now you guys are appearing next. Do you know?
We're
I know you got a busy schedule.
Right now we have a September 6th in Cincinnati. We have a show there.
Okay.
We have upcoming shows, but they're not confirmed yet.
Okay, but I'm sure you have an itinerary on your, like, do you have, like, an official website?
Yes, we have www.originalstonecityband.com.
Okay, cool. Very good, very good. Okay, so I just want to say that for all things chocolate, you can go to patricechocolatebanks.com. I want to shout out my family, all the Funkalutionaries who are supporting what I'm doing right now. I want to shout out the Facebook Nation, all my friends on Facebook that support all my efforts. And I want to say, may the funk be with you at all times, with all of y'all, at all times. And
thank
I want to just
much.
I just want to thank you guys so much, Stone City Band, so much for doing this with me. And I want to also, continue. We're gonna play songs until Block Talk Radio shuts us down, and us is Tribe Family Channel. Beverly Black Johnson is the creator of Tribe Family Channel. She is the one that is bringing us to all of your fans. And I want to go out because I want to also honor Tina Marie. So I want to go out with Fire and Desire and bless all you guys. And the next time you come to anywhere close to L.A., somebody got to come up with a ticket for chocolate. I got to get
in on the top. We also want to give a shout-out to the Johnson family, you know, with their support. They're giving us plenty of support.
Okay. All right. Good. The Johnson family. Okay. All right. Okay. So, Nate, thank you so much, my brother. And we are going to go out, like I said, on fire and desire. And bless all of you guys. And y'all keep on doing what you're doing, okay? And keep doing it like you are doing it. Because it's a real deal. You guys are OGs, okay?
Thank you, my sister.
All right. Here we go on Everybody is a Star. Fire. And may the funk be with all y'all out there. And I'll see you next week. Fire and desire.
That's right. Peace out.
Wow. It's really good to see you again, baby. And I must admit, you're looking very, very, very nice these days. I guess life must be treating you well. Oh, me? Well, I've just been doing the same old thing I've always been doing. You know, I've got a new lady now. And it's a little different than it was. You know, I think back to where we met, the way I used to be and the cold way I used to act. But more than that, I think of how you changed me with your love and sensitivity. Remember when I used to
love.
put your arms around me and hold me like you used to.
I wanna hold you tight.
Tell me, Nick, everything's gonna be alright.
Everything,
put your arms.
Party Woman. Then you will know why they call me When You Want.
Give me straight bones.